Welcome to the Birmingham Vineyard podcast. We hope you find it insightful and encouraging.
If you want to find out more about us, why not check out our website, birminghamvineyard.com.
Hanging in the Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery is a masterpiece, a watercolour by Edward Burne Jones. It's called The Star of Bethlehem. You can see it up there behind me. It was commissioned by the Corporation of Birmingham in 1887, and it's the largest watercolour of the 19th century. And that painting is the backdrop for our series. So let's start by looking carefully. Who's in the masterpiece? Well, there's Mary, and she's holding the baby Jesus, God made human, in a teenage girl's arms. There's Joseph. He's just been out to collect some firewood. I think there'll be a fire and a bonfire if he sets fire to anything in that little shelter. But he's got the firewood in his arms. And there's the angel holding the Star of Bethlehem in their hands. The magi, the wise men with their three gifts. And there they are, looking like a mix of the Knight Templar and teachers at Hogwarts. Behind this idyllic scene, which is just so wrong in so many different ways, there sits a truth. Real people sought Jesus, even at his birth. And we are going to seek him today. What we call Christmas, it wasn't easy. It wasn't idyllic like that. And it isn't always easy now. And the characters of the Christmas story, they had to go on a journey. And we're going on a journey to discover the truth. So this week, of the characters in that painting, we're going to be thinking about the kings, the magi, the wise men, the men from the east. Wherever the story of the birth of Jesus is told, so too is told the tale of those strange men from a faraway land who brought gifts to the baby Jesus. The story only comes in the Bible, in the Gospel of Matthew. And all that we know about the wise men, we find in chapter 2, from verse 1 through to verse 12. And they leave behind a lot of unanswered questions. And we're going to think about those. Who are the wise men and where did they come from? How many really were there? What's that star? How long after the birth of Jesus did they arrive in Jerusalem? And then how did they know that the baby was going to be born king of the Jews? Because of the mystery and all those unanswered questions, great legends have grown up around them. They've been given names, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar. They've been venerated as saints. You even have the adoration now of the Magi. But we're going to see where the truth lies. It begins this way. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, the Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews?" Right away, we discover something interesting. The wise men, whoever they are, they show up in Jerusalem after the birth of Jesus. Those scenes there that we see on the screen with the shepherds and the wise men gathered around in the manger on the night Jesus was born, it's all wrong. The wise men came some time later. But how much later? Well, we don't really know. Maybe a few months later. Some even think a year or more later. One hint. It was at least a few days later, because when the wise men find Jesus, he's with his mother in a house in Bethlehem. There's no manger involved. So who were our wise men? They're called magi from the east. The term magi is a Persian word and referred to a special class of priests in the Persian Empire. From other sources, we know that they had been around for hundreds of years before Christ. They had their own religion, probably Zoroastrianism, their own priesthood, their writings, and they appear in the book of Daniel. And it's probable that Daniel, the guy with the lions and the den and all that, he may have even been head appointed over the Magi in the kings of Darius's time. They were professors and philosophers of their day. They were brilliant, and they were also into and trained in what we would call astrology. In our day, astrology has rightly got a bad rap, but in the beginning, astrology was connected to humankind's search for God. The ancients studied the skies in order to find the answers to the great questions of life. Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? The important fact for us is to know that they were highly influential in Persia. In fact, probably advisors to the king. You could even call them kingmakers. And they were highly educated. So yeah, when we call them wise men, we're probably on the right track. So that's who they are. But why have they travelled so far? 1,000 miles from Persia to Israel. Why such a tremendous journey? The answer is they've come to see the baby-born king of the Jews. It's fascinating. They knew a baby had been born, but they didn't know where. They knew he was king, but didn't know his name. So they come to Jerusalem, the capital city of Israel, seeking help. They also assume that everybody must know in the city about the baby. A great surprise awaits. Verse 2 says this. It adds detail that's baffled scholars for many years. We have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. Helps to remember that the wise men were studying the stars. They wouldn't be frightened or put off by an unusual display. It wasn't uncommon to associate the birth of a great ruler with an unusual heavenly phenomena. So what was the star? Well, frankly, we don't know. The Greek word is aster, and it's a general one for a bright light in the sky. There are a number of different ideas. Perhaps it was Halley's Comet, but we're about 11 years out on that one. A supernova, a bright flash in the sky. But there are no recorded ones right then. The conjunction of planets, Jupiter, Mars and Saturn, doesn't quite add up. Or a supernatural light, the Shekinah glory of God in the sky, leading the way. Now, frankly, we don't know, but we know that it was enough to set them on a journey. Let's take the mystery a step further. Star alone wouldn't tell them all they needed to know. The star triggers their journey to the capital of Israel, Jerusalem. And after speaking to Herod and heading for Bethlehem, the star rose and went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. So here's the bigger question. How did they know the star, whatever it was, meant anything at all? Well, here we have to go back in time again to the time when Daniel and those Jews were in Persia. They intermingled for probably 500 years. Daniel was considered a good Jew amongst the Persians, a leader. And he told, and the Persians knew about the Jewish expectation of the Messiah, the Saviour coming. And it's possible they even knew of the prophecies in Daniel of the 70 weeks and the coming of the Messiah. What they didn't know was the exact time. So when they saw the bright light, the star in the sky, they knew the time had come. And so it shouldn't surprise us that these Persian wise men set off on their journey. They arrive at the Jewish king's palace, Herod's palace. Now Herod's reaction, let's see that. In Matthew 2:3 it says this, when Herod heard the news, he was disturbed and all of Jerusalem with him. Now the word disturbed, you could translate it as shook up violently. Herod was shook up. We know he was an old, very sick man. He's dying. He's tottering on an unstable throne. The idea of a baby born king of the Jews was a direct threat to him. And he's scared because the Magi have arrived. If you look in the painting there, one of them's got a sword. Let's think about who they really were. They have substance. They're important in the Persian Empire. They have travelled 1,000 miles. It wasn't just three of them. It doesn't even say there were three. And they weren't just in lone camels across the desert like on the Christmas cards. They swept into Jerusalem with pomp and power and circumstance, covered in the dust of 1,000 miles. As a minimum, they'd have had a full military escort. They're carrying precious gifts, servants alongside them, maybe men numbering 300 of them in total. No wonder Jerusalem was buzzing. And remember, they had no problem getting an audience with King Herod. The Magi explain their journey. And Herod turns to the scribes and priests for advice. He has one question. Where is the child to be born? A question of concern. The scribes don't have to look it up. They know the answer. 700 years earlier, the prophet Micah, it's written in our Old Testament, predicted the Messiah's birth in Bethlehem. It says this, "But you, Bethlehem, Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times." That wasn't hidden away. That was common knowledge in Israel. Little children learnt that in the Sabbath schools before they were 6 years old. It's hard to believe that Herod didn't know that. If you add what the scribes knew to what the wise men figured out, you conclude that the signs of Jesus' coming were clear enough for anyone to see. It's sometimes said that God always speaks loud enough for a willing ear to hear. He did that here. The wise men knew and did something about it. They got on their camels. The scribes, they knew. They did nothing. The story is about to be filled with intrigue and darkness. It's as if I go down to Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery with a large bucket of blood. I take it and I throw it over Burne Jones. We're going to find out more about that later on. First, we're going to make that gentle segue into singing "O Little Town of Bethlehem." I left things inciting violence against the property of Birmingham City Council. I apologise for that for the recording's sake, and was in no means asking people to go out and throw blood over the Nativity. But it is a violent and in many ways bloody situation we're arriving at. As we imagine the stains running down the picture, let's think of this in terms of kingdoms. The rule and reign of God has arrived here on earth in the shape of that vulnerable baby. God's kingdom come in the shape of his Son. The God of this age, as the Bible describes him, Satan, the evil one, sees that vulnerable child there, the Son of God, the threat to Satan's rule and reign. Satan will do all he can to destroy that child. So let's pick up the story. Herod. He calls in the Magi and asks them, when did the star first appear to them? The text in verse 7 indicates he wanted an exact time. He didn't tell them why, but he wanted to know. You have to read on in the story to find out the answer. And the answer is horrifying. Matthew 2:16 says this, "When Herod realized he'd been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under. in accordance with the time he learnt from the Magi. It appears that the Magi told Herod that the star first appeared to them 2 years earlier. Now, was Jesus born 2 years earlier? Or did the star appear 2 years earlier to give them plenty of time to make the journey? Or maybe it took them 2 years to make the journey from Persia. We can't be sure. It seems likely that Herod assumed that the star first appeared when the child was born. If the Magi told him it first appeared 2 years ago, then that explains why Herod ordered all the male children in Bethlehem and the vicinity under 2 years old to be put to death. Those kingdoms are clashing. Now, we can't be exactly sure of the timing, but neither could Herod. But what we have is a situation building up. The Magi haven't seen the baby Jesus yet. They don't know how old he is. The scribes know where he's to be born, but they evidently don't believe the Magi know what they're talking about. And meanwhile, Herod knows where the baby is to be born, but not how old he is. So he makes sure he kills. To make sure he kills him, he orders the slaughter of all the baby boys in Bethlehem. In his mind, he's willing to kill them all to make sure he gets the one that he wants. Now, we know what happens next. Herod asks the Magi to go to Bethlehem as his representatives, find out where the baby is and report back to him so he can go and worship him. Herod's up to no good. And for all their wisdom, the Magi fail to see his trick. And why shouldn't they? If they've come so far to worship the child, the new king, why wouldn't Herod want to do that as well? They've got no reason to suspect his motives. The Magi set out for Bethlehem, only 6 miles away from Jerusalem. And they see the star, the light, rise in the east. Verse 9 is very specific. It says the star went on before them until it came and stood over the very home where the baby Jesus was. That's necessary because they don't know where in Bethlehem this child is. As we know, there are lots of children under two in Bethlehem in the vicinity. So they're filled with joy as the star leads them to the right house. And verse 11 says this, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary. They bowed down and worshipped him. Now, it wasn't quite like the picture. But he certainly didn't look like a king. It probably was a home rather than a stable. It didn't look like a castle or a palace. He had no scepter in his hand. He commanded no armies. He gave no speeches, passed no laws. He couldn't walk or talk. He gave no royal decrees from his lips. There was nothing to make you think he was a king. To the outward eye, he was nothing but a child born in poverty. But to the Magi, he was a king. They looked at the evidence before them. Somehow they saw beyond the present and into the future, and in deep faith they worshipped him. They saw that this child would one day rule the world, and they weren't ashamed to fall on their faces before him. Part of that worship, we know, and probably most famously know, they brought gifts. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Now, the gifts themselves are a worthy tribute, fit for a king. But beyond that, there's also an ancient tradition as to the meaning of those gifts, symbols of who the child would be. Gold, representing wealth and power, fit for a king, for a kingdom coming. Frankincense, spice used in the temple for worship of the Lord, representing the child's godheadship, his deity, God born in human flesh. And then thirdly, myrrh, a perfume made from the leaves of the sister's rose, used in beauty treatments, but also when mixed with vinegar, an anesthetic. And then after a person died, myrrh was used to anoint the body to prepare it for burial. And the Bible tells us, when the man Jesus' body was bound after his death in linen wraps, along with 75 pounds of myrrh and aloes, so the gift of myrrh, it pictures his suffering and his death. Gold, for he is king. Frankincense, for he is God. Myrrh, for he is man, and he will suffer and die. Did the Magi understand all this? No, there's no sign they did. But God arranged it so their gifts to the holy child Jesus would point to who he is and why he came and what would happen to him. So as we come to the close, three abiding truths. The first is this. If the wise men can find Jesus, then so can we. Think about them. Learning from hundreds of years past, 1,000 miles away, a different culture, a distance to travel, language barriers, racial barriers, religious barriers, a hostile king, and an indifferent religious leadership. It wasn't an easy job for them to find Jesus, to seek and find the truth, but they did. They found him, and so can we. Secondly, if God can use a star, a bright light, an aster, to reach those pagan astrologers, then he can use anything to reach us and those around us. The story is of great power and hope, of God being infinitely creative in the things he can use to break through to people when we can seem so far away from him. He can use a star. He can use a book, a television show, a song, a place, a chance comment, or anything he desires. If God can reach the wise men through a shining light in the sky, he can reach anybody today. His kingdom come. What's he reaching out to us for today? What's he saying to each one of us? And then finally, if the wise men offered Jesus gifts fit for a king, then so should we. It's good to remember that gift giving didn't start with Santa Claus. The wise men, they brought gifts fit for a king, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's good to give gifts. It's good to show love. But it's even better to give gifts and show love and worship to Jesus. The one who loved us when we were unlovely and far away, loved us and gave us the gift of his life. He came into this world as a baby and lived the life of Christ, crucified, died, resurrected. This surely is the central meaning of the story. This year and every year, and all during the year, we're invited to return to Bethlehem. A baby lies there who is king and God and sacrifice. The king in a cradle, the sacrifice resting in his mother's arms. Before long, he will arise to do his work and the world will see him as he really is. But for the moment, in this masterpiece, the baby sleeps in Bethlehem, surrounded by regal gifts and foreign eyes, wide with wonder.
We hope you enjoyed the talk and found it helpful.
Why not come along and visit us? We gather at 3 services across 2 sites on a Sunday and meet during the week in small groups across the city. More information on both of these can be found on our website.
Thanks for listening, and God bless.